Some people will spend hours camping out to get tickets to a sporting event or show. Others might spend hundreds of dollars for costumes for cosplay. Taking extreme measures as a fan isn't anything new. People's fascinations and obsessions have been a part of human life for quite a while. Let's take a trip back in time to the 1960s when a certain boy band was making international fame.
How long do you think Beatlemania will last?
As long as you all keep coming.
For them, and I'll always love them. Even when I'm 105 and an old grandmother, I'll love them. And Paul McCartney, if you are listening, Adrian from Brooklyn loves you with all her heart. I love you, Paul, and please come to the window so I can just see you. I saw you smoking before, and I kissed the limousine you looked out of. But I love you, and I want you, Paul. Please look at it. And Ringo, you can look at it too, because I like you.
Maybe you're not quite as obsessed as that particular Beatles fan. That's okay. You don't have to be completely obsessed to be a fan. Whether you're fixated on a new TV show, going all to all the concerts of a favorite artist, or just screaming at the TV wearing all your favorite sports teams' jerseys, there's many ways to be a fan, and it can have lasting effects on our daily lives.
We'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you a big fan of something? A movie, a comic, a sports team, an artist, whatever it may be, call in with your stories. How did your fandom start? And why do you like being a fan? Call in at 800-642-1234 or leave us a comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Regan Gurung is the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He joins us now to talk about the psychology of being a fan. Regan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
There you are. Great. So what is it? What's going on in our brains when we latch on to something as a full-on fan?
So a lot's going on, actually. And I think right at the onset, being a fan, it's fun to be a fan. And whenever something is fun, it feels good. And whenever something feels good, our brain likes to feel good. So it releases all these chemicals that we enjoy. And here's where it gets tricky. We enjoy those chemicals and we want more. So we start searching out more opportunities to get some more of that fun. So right at the very core of it, there's this really neat interaction between it being fun, that fun being rewarding. And so we work harder and harder to get more of those rewards.
Regan, were you ever a big fan of anything growing up?
You know, I think there's a key phrase in there is growing up. And yes, absolutely. I was a fan of many things. And as I reflect on it, I think I was a much bigger fan in a much bigger way when I was younger than I am now. And but I was reflecting on that. And I think that's why so many of the things that we are fans for, we tend to be fans of and develop when we are younger. And I think that's especially the case for sports team fandom in particular, but for a lot of other things as well.
Now, we're talking about individual fans and what it does for us, but there's also fandom, the community of fans. Is there kind of that social connection angle if we're a fan of, the Beatles and standing in a crowd, or a fan of a team and we know other people around the world are watching with us on TV?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as far as there's this notion of group membership, because being a fan together with other fans, it does a lot of different things. So, for example, you are now a member of the group. And a funny thing happens when you look at what happens with group membership. Whenever we are a member of a group, we assume that those other people in that group are like us. It gets even crazier, actually. When we are a member of a group, we think our group is better and anybody not in our group is not as good. And I think you also see that definitely with fandom, where you can take very normal people, and the moment they realize that that normal person who was once normal is a fan of another team or something else, automatically, we start seeing these differences between us and them. And this is such a pervasive phenomena that you can divide people up into groups on something seemingly innocuous, and you'll still see these same dynamics taking place.
You know, it seems like fandom is a common occurrence with teenagers, although I would argue that adults get heavily involved in it too. But posters on the wall, listening to a particular album, do you see fandom as a particularly big piece of teenage life?
I see fandom and some of the elements of fandom as being more prevalent during certain stages of development than others. And I know that was a very long answer to a very simple question, but it's more because there are so many different elements of fandom. I think, you know, there's the fun element and the rewarding element that I talked about, but I think there's also this notion of identity. When you see, let's just take a singer, when you see a singer or a band whose lyrics resonate, whose music seems to be speaking to you, and if you are at that point in your life when maybe you think nobody's listening to you, where maybe you're experiencing certain issues, well, if there's this band that's singing about exactly what you're experiencing, your connection, your attachment is going to be so much greater. And I think that tends to happen when we are younger versus then when we're older, although it can certainly happen at any stage of the life cycle.
Talking about the psychology of being a fan of whatever, anything. Regan Gurung is with us from UW Green Bay. And Regan, let's talk about, there's sometimes a dark side of fandom, especially I think in the age of the internet. You see people who are into computer gaming or role-playing games or Star Wars sometimes turning against other fans who don't look like them or are not the gender, say, they expect,
right,
or the ethnic or racial group that they associate with that kind of fandom. And it gets sometimes really ugly. What happens? Why would we go in that direction?
So once, you know, this sort of builds on what I said earlier as far as that group membership goes. You know, the moment you have this strong group identity, you get defensive about your group. And anybody who seems to be violating or going against what you believe your group stands for is somebody who you can tend to dislike. Now, there's something else that's going on here too, and that's when we talk about levels of fandom. In that great opening clip, with the woman or girl talking about Paul McCartney. I mean, part of me wants to say, "Gosh, I wish we could find her to see if she still feels that way." You know, maybe she will be at Paul McCartney's concert at Lambeau Field next year. You know, it's still going strong, but it's those levels, right, that make a difference. We talk about obsession. We talk about infatuation. I think you can be a fan and have a very healthy relationship with your fandom and actually with your life. But you could also be that fan where it reaches a point that it interferes with your normal functioning, where you know your identity or with that group or that individual becomes so strong that any threat to that individual or that identity makes you react. So I think it's this notion. I think many of us are fans of many things, but it varies in the extent to which we are fans and how much out of our way we will go, how much we'll inconvenience ourselves to nurture that fandom. And I think that's one of those things that's where the dark side comes in. And of course, it can happen, but the key is catch yourself so that you don't let it hurt you or others.
Well, you know, there's a lot of hobby conventions around now, from anime conventions to comic cons. What do you think the experience of attending one of these conventions, or if you're like a big music fan, attending a big concert has on us?
Well, and let's break that up into two, because I think the Comic Cons and, you know, those kinds of conventions, here's an opportunity where you get to learn more and more and more about whatever you you're really interested in. The big concerts, I think there are definitely some really neat similarities that we can look at. And what's happening here is it goes beyond this something in just your head to something that you are now sharing with many other individuals. Especially if you talk about a concert, there's the situation, there's the sounds, there's the special effects, there's all these other folks in that concert arena sharing that same experience. And now the sights, the sounds, that visceral experience feeds that fandom, and I think gives us such a high that it can be addictive. I mean, you can crave it. That's why so many of us spend so much money to go to concerts. I think the same thing with Comic-Con. It's one thing, and in this day and age with the internet, it's relatively easy to sit at your computer and learn all you can about a certain comic book or a certain movie. Or, you know, if you know there's a movie coming down the pike, you know, let's say, the Joker, there's a new Joker movie, and you want to know more about it. And, you know, ooh, there was a special clip of the Joker, first look at the new costume. Well, that's one thing you can do when you're on the internet. But if you go to a Comic-Con or something like that, at one shot, for almost 10, 12 or more hours a day, you can feed that yearning for that more information, and that can be intoxicating and a lot of fun.
Regan Gurung is with us from UW Green Bay. We're talking about the psychology of being a fan and how it can affect a person's life.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you consider yourself to be a fan of something, a team, a book series, a particular musician or artist? What's the most extreme thing you've done as part of that obsession? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Connor. We're talking with Regan Gurung, Professor of Human Development and Psychology at UW Green Bay. And we're having a conversation about the psychology of being a fan.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you or have you ever been a big fan of something? However you want to define that, call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Leslie in Platteville. Hello, Leslie. How are you? Welcome to Central Time.
Hi. My name's Leslie. I'm from Platteville. Love the show. I had to call in because I am known for being a huge fan of The Legend of Zelda video game. In fact, with a lot of my friends who are into gaming and anime, they know me as Zelda. I cosplay. I have four different outfits for Zelda, four different versions of Zelda. I've also dressed up as Link. My students know it. My classroom has Legend of Zelda stuff in it. My house has Zelda stuff in it. And this year I was fortunate enough to meet two of the voice actors who were in the most recent video game, including the actress who voiced Zelda herself. So that was really cool.
Very cool, Leslie. Thank you so much for the call. Regan, what do you think about fans of video games like The Legend of Zelda and so many others that are out there?
Now, I think most video games have such a wonderful way of taking us into these worlds that are so different from reality. And, you know, there's a lot of Breath of the Wild played in my household. So, Leslie, I know, I hear you on what you're talking about. And I think what's really neat here, and that's one of the things that we find, is people who play more video games, who read more fiction, right? And video games as fiction, but tend to, it actually enhances their creativity. And I think that's something we don't talk about enough. Now, of course, if you're playing it all the time, if the first thing you do the moment you wake up in the morning is turn and switch it on, well, that's obviously not healthy. But used in moderation, video games, and especially some of the wonderful stuff that you see now in terms of Zelda and things like that, can take you to some place that it can be really good for creativity and how you think. Again, as long as it's not interrupting with what else is going on. And I think all those things Leslie mentioned, those different dimensions, I mean, here's a great example of how if you really like something, if you have, you know, artifacts or amiibos of it around your house or posters, just looking at it can remind you of the pleasure you get from it and sort of keep that those good feelings going.
Thanks for the call, Zelda. Leslie, we'll go now to Mark with us in Three Lakes. Mark, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What are you a fan of, Mark?
Well, I'm a fan of PBS, radio, and TV. Why? Because I'm trying to get informed and learn something. And I find you guys to be the best source of it all.
Mark, thank you so much. That's very nice to say. And Regan, you know, people with something like public radio or public TV, they'll get those tote bags or mugs or whatever, and they'll flaunt their identity, their support, their fandom for that thing that they like.
You know, and just something to add to what Mark said when he talked about the curiosity and wanting to learn stuff, you actually see that in certain forms of fandom where, for example, fans of TV shows. So Mark mentioned PBS, but TV shows in general, things on Netflix, for example, you see the true fan who wants to know more, who wants to talk about the show with somebody. And I think that's a really neat element, too, where you dig deeper to learn more because it's intellectually stimulating. And that's another whole dimension and level that you can get out of it.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Bruce in Madison. Good afternoon, Bruce. Welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. Okay, I'm a Chicago Bears fan. Am I on? Okay, I'm a Chicago Bears fan, and I'm 72 years old, and I think it's because I played football in high school, and I was a South Bend Central Bear. And we had a C on the side of our helmet, and the same color and everything.
Nice.
And it was an important part of my life. I've always been a Chicago Bears fan. I get nervous before the game. It ruins my week when they lose, and I'm thrilled throughout the week when they win. Totally irrational. I can't explain it, but it's definitely there.
Bruce, thank you so much for the call. And I can relate, Regan, because I'm from Philadelphia and I'm a diehard Philadelphia Eagles fan. So you can imagine my excitement last February.
Yes.
Do you think it depends on what you're a fan of? Are sports fans experiencing more negative effects or positive effects than, say, fans of Harry Potter?
Yes, and here's why. Because unlike Harry Potter, which, you know, there's the series of movies and there's a finite set, if you're a sports fan, every week, and especially if we look at the NFL, you know, right now where we are in the season, every week you don't know what the outcome is going to be. And, you know, I want to pick up on something Bruce said. Bruce, I don't think it's irrational to feel that way. It's not irrational. It's actually perfectly natural. If you really care about something, then if that something or somebody does not do well, in this case loses, well, I think it's very natural to feel bad. I mean, quite honestly, I can tell you, I reached a point when I used to watch games and I realized that maybe I was getting to be too much of a fan when I could literally feel my heart pounding. And I told myself, you know what? That's not good. I've got to come up with some way to not be so attached to the outcome of this game. So, you know, another element here, whether it's Eagles or Bears, it's the growing up. If you grew up with that team, you're going to get even more connected, and that's going to be an even deeper feeling.
Bruce, thanks for the call. You're having more fun than some of us this NFL season. We're talking to psychologist Regan Gurung from UW Green Bay about what it means to be a fan. Back to your calls now. Ryan is on the line in Watertown. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, what are you a fan of?
A big fan of Spider-Man.
Ah.
Growing up, even in high school, I think that's when it really started. Because my uncle was really into comics, and I kind of got interested from him. But for me, just being, you know, kind of depressed kind of teenager, well, any anxious teenager, I just kind of related to the character of Spider-Man, which really helped back then. And this is fun that way.
Is there a movie incarnation of Spider-Man that you particularly attached to, Ryan?
I really had high hopes for the third one, the Spider-Man 3, but the character of Venom just really ruined it, unfortunately.
Ryan, thanks a lot for that call. That idea, Regan, of identifying in this case with a character that you're a fan of.
Well, and you know, something else here, especially with the comic books, what's really neat about the comic books is that over the, you know, history of comic books, you see reinventions. So you may not have liked, you know, the one form of Batman, but you may really like the Dark Knight. You know, as far as Spider-Man goes, I wonder if Ryan's watched the Spider-Verse, because that looks like another whole take on this, who Spider-Man is and what Spider-Man can be and all the things that can do for you. And I think that's something particularly neat about stories that are written, whether it's comic books or things like that, where there's this reinvention, and you may not like a certain iteration, but some other writer comes along and bam, you're a fan of that writer and what he or she does to that character. So many different ways to go, especially in comic books. It's a good time to be a fan of comic books.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Dan in Drummond. Good afternoon, Dan. Welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. When I was younger and my friends were listening to rock music like that, what I got turned on by was polka music. And back in the 70s, in the late 70s, I had the chance to meet my idol, who was Frankie Yankovic. And nice. The first time I met him, it was just a quick handshake, hello, and that's it. A year later, I was in a car accident where I was on crutches. I was up, got up there early to sit. He came over. He put his hand on my shoulder and said, hey, Dan, what happened? And wow. That just blew my mind. I mean, when a guy like that sees hundreds of thousands of people around the world and to remember just one person, that showed me what a true showman is like.
Dan, thank you so much for the call. That's an awesome story. Regan, do you think being a music fan can have those types of special benefits?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's special benefits per se, but I think, you know, Dan's a really lucky person to have that kind of interaction and not just that special story, but actually getting to meet their, you know, his idol. I think in so many cases with music, you don't have the chance to actually meet the individual. And I think sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad because I've read a lot of stories where a fan of a certain musician meets the musician and she or he isn't what they had in their heads, yeah. You know? And I think that's one of those things when you hold somebody up and appreciate somebody, meeting them in person, especially with a lot of celebrities, who are they really, right? Do we really know? And I think that's one of those big question marks.
Regan, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Regan Grurug is the Ben J. and Joyce Rosenberg Professor of Human Development and Psychology at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He joined us to talk about what it means to be a fan.